You're listening to the Dad Bod Golf Pod with Kyle Rush and Ben Taylor.
What's up, everybody? We're back again. It's episode 279 of the Dad Bod Golf Pod. It's Kyle and Ben. The Masters is over, and it's time to talk about it and everything that goes along with it. But first, we have to let you know that tonight's episode is brought to you by Bet Online, the number one sports betting website in the country. We hope that you got a portion of the – I mean, John Rahm was one of the top three or four betting favorites. Hopefully you picked him. Probably paid out pretty nice. Sign up today. Use coupon code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V. Get a 50% welcome bonus. Tons of stuff you can bet on. There's an online casino. Just tons of stuff you can have fun with. And the cool the thing I like about it is – it's not one of those like floating balances where like you just like and you could just screw around and run up a huge bill. You control what you put in there. So that's, you know, you can cut yourself off pretty easily.
You know what you don't control?
What's that?
What you lose when it's 1 a.m. and you've been in the Jack Daniels and you decided to start playing poker.
You actually can control that because you are only limited to what you deposit. So right. There you go. BetOnline is where the game starts. All right.
I seemed a little out of control. I'm just going to say that. Let me just say that. I seemed a little out of control.
There you go. All right. So, John Rahm.
Hold on. Before you get started.
Go ahead.
A little surprise, a little hot topic for you.
Okay.
So, I jumped in the pool, my wife's work pool for betting for the Masters. You pick four players. I got beat by a girl.
Oh, yeah.
Not only that. They're all mad at both of us because she finished first and I finished second, and she is the wife of a dude that works there. So basically two people that did not work there waxed everybody's rear end, and they're all mad at us.
Love it. Hey.
Well, I still want my money. I still want my money. I don't care. I still want my money.
Rules are rules. Pay it up.
There they are.
All right. So John Rahm, I guess he just survives, outlasts everybody, wins the Masters. What a grueling, miserable weekend it had to have been. He battled through some of the worst conditions on Friday and Saturday and finished off a solid second and third round or second round. He was going to win a Masters. He was going to win more majors eventually. And he did it. He did it. He putted yesterday morning when they picked back up to start on seven when he had the birdie putt. I think he played 7, 8, 9, and 10 and only had like four or five putts through the first four or five holes. Like he was putting absolutely lights out, hit a little skid there. I mean, shoot, they played 30 holes. Like he hit a little bit of a putting skid, but he was just steady, hit a ton of fairways. And he hits it so far that when he's hitting fairways, he's not going to miss greens. So you got to make a bunch of birdies to beat him. And the putter got cold for Brooks, and I don't know if he got tired. I don't know if he just wasn't as sharp, but he just sort of wilted. He had the lead all the way up to 13 under and finished what, 7 or 8 under.
He had a bad day today.
So he had a bad day, which would have been the back half of the third round and then the whole.
Yeah, they stopped on 7. So basically, he had a bad day of 8 through 18 and then another 18.
Correct. So, but. A lot of good things to take away. At what moment did you think it was pretty much over? Was Rahm going to take it?
I'm glad you asked this question because you posed this whenever you sent the rapid fire questions. Right after you sent it, he addressed it in his press conference or his post round interview. He actually didn't think it was over. He thought he had a good chance at one point. I thought it was before then. I thought 12. When Brooks missed the green at 12 and did not get up and down and put up a bogey there and Rahm parred, he had an easy 2-putt par. I was like, I just don't see him with 2 par 5s left and a short par 3 left. I just don't see Rahm throwing it away unless he hits it in the water on 15. That was the only thing that I thought could have happened. So I said 12. I was like, as soon as he two putted on 12, I was like, it's over. Like, there's no, you know, I guess the only people I thought that had a chance is if at that point, if Colin rolls off four birdies in a row, he probably has a chance. I think there was somebody else that if they rolled off four birdies in a row, they had a chance if he stayed right where he was, but it just wasn't going to happen. I mean, he had it and he had the bag. And so I texted my roommate after 12 and I said, that's it. Surely he's going to win this thing. So that was my moment. Do you want to, did you hear what he said his was?
What did he say? You're talking about John?
Yeah. He said when he hit the fairway on 13, it hit him. This is all I got to do is coast from here.
On the second nine. See, I thought it was over before then. Yeah. then.
Did you really?
Yeah.
After Brooks had three bogeys on the front?
Yeah. After the three bogeys on the front, honestly, I felt like it was going to be that for him. It was going to be a scramble round, which makes it to where you're not firing and making birdies and going to make a charge. He was going to be playing defense all round, and that was just a recipe for disaster.
Going into 12, he was only 10 under, and you know, you already had 8 posted in the clubhouse. So I thought he hits in the water on 12, all of a sudden it's tie ball game.
Sure, but did you feel like that was going to happen? Did you feel like John was going to?
I would have. No, but then again, if he overcompensates, he could have done like Scottie Scheffler and hit it 3 days in a row up there in the damn bushes on 12. I still don't understand that.
On 11, John hit a bomb hit a bomb drive, and mm-hmm. then he hit one that looked like, I think it, if I'm not mistaken, it looked like it was going to go left and it hung on. Am I right? Or was that earlier today?
That was earlier. He hit center of the green in the final round.
Okay.
Center of the green, easy two putt and moved on.
There was one that was, I thought he might have hooked one in the water on 11, and that would have been, you know, double. That would have been huge.
Yeah.
But I mean, Brooks was lucky to even be in it, if you really think about it, because earlier in the day on 15, when he played it the first time, he spun it off the green and it doesn't go in the water. And then he chips up and makes an easy par. Like, that could have easily been a double bogey, and then mm-hmm. you know, you're tied going into the second, teeing off the second round instead of you mm-hmm. know, having the lead. So I just didn't feel like Brooks had it, and you could kind of tell early it was going to be a struggle. It was going to be a struggle win if he won at all. And Rahm is just good. He's the best player in the world. So
yeah,
he proved it today. So
I thought Brooks had a chance. Going back to when they first teed off, I don't know if you remember, Brooks hit it way left into fairway. And then when he hit the green, I thought, okay, like, he's bailed himself out. The confidence is there. You got a par five coming up. If he gets a birdie, but then he just still just kind of laid one down there, then laid it in the bunker, and then didn't hit his putt coming back, and he parred two. And I thought, oh, this is not good.
Hit a good drive, hit a wedge up, didn't make the putt, didn't even really scare it, and then Rahm pours the birdie in. That's honestly right then and there. I was like, I kind of felt it, but like when Rahm birdied three and he parred it, I was like, oh, isn't that crazy?
That's 2 years in a row, because when Scheffler chipped in on three against Cam Smith, we were all like, it's over. And that was on three.
Yep. Another similarity with that between those two is Rahm four-putted the first hole and mm-hmm. won, and Scheffler four-putted the last hole and won, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, good stuff. We're hoping for some fireworks. There wasn't a ton. There was a bunch of guys that started making a bunch of birdies late, but it was too little too late. Mm-hmm. Phil played great today. Thought maybe like a Russell Henley or a who are some other Patrick Reed. Thought Patrick Reed could probably make a run. He was coming off a birdie at 13, and I think he bogeyed 14. Goes back, birdies 15, And then hits it in the bunker on 16. I'm like, dang, man, if he, you know, Patrick Reed would have won, that could have been even bigger. That could have even been a bigger shockwave than it.
That'd have been way bigger than Brooks winning. I texted my college roommate because he and I were going back and forth, and I just told him, I said, I think the magic number is 10. If somebody can get to 10, that may put some pressure on Rahm. He'll start looking at the scoreboard, but just nobody could get there. And, you know, anytime you're in double digits and nobody else is, it just, for some reason, it seems like it's a lot easier. It's less pressure. As you said, you know, quote unquote, you know, in the mode where it's just, let's hit the fairway, let's hit the center of the green, take our two putt, move on to the next hole. Yeah. And, you know, every once in a while we may run a birdie in, but other than that, it should be easy, smooth sailing from here. And it'll look like it. I mean, hell, the only trouble he had after that was when he got to 18 and the ball got kicked out in the, you know, he didn't make it to the fairway. That's the only trouble he had.
Yeah, and he still made par.
And he's still par.
That's incredible. That's incredible. All right, I want to move to the next topic. We got a couple rapid-fire topics. LIV golf coverage. So that was the early talk. Would it be fair? How would it be received on television? Blah, blah, blah. There was no featured groups on the first day of any LIV guys. Ben, early takeaway, I've got something funny that I want to see if you caught that I thought was hilarious when it was said, but what's your overall takeaway?
I think the coverage was fair over the weekend, like it had to be. I do think Friday was better. I texted you, there were a couple of LIV guys in feature groups on Friday. I think Thursday and the original matchups were totally purposeful. I think that they did that on purpose, and they stuck LIV guys with guys that weren't name brand guys, so they wouldn't be in the feature group on Thursday. And then they just didn't have much of a choice on Friday. And then, of course, Saturday, when everything gets shuffled around, you kind of stuck with what you're stuck with. So was it fair? Thursday was definitely not. Friday probably evened it out a little bit. And then Saturday and Sunday, I just chalk up as a meh because they don't – I mean, they had to show Patrick Reed he was making birdies. They had to show Brooks because he was in the final group. I didn't see DJ hit any. Of course, he did play. He did start on the back nine on the final round. But I didn't see DJ hit anything today.
But he didn't play.
No, he didn't. You know, other than that, the other LIV guys. You know, Mieto Pierre. They showed his chip in, so they did. They did cut away to show a good shot by a LIV guy.
Yeah.
So I think overall it was okay. I mean, it was not. Definitely not slanted towards the PGA Tour, I don't think.
I think they showed the LIV guys as much as they deserve to be showed. The guys, agreed. I think the guys that were playing well got great coverage. I think the guys that hit great shots got great coverage. Guys like Bryson, who go shoot 74-74 and go home, I didn't even know he was in the tournament. Never saw him hit a shot. One shot. DJ, never saw DJ hit a shot. I think DJ was right around even par. Heck, he may have been over par. I don't know for the tournament. So there were several guys that I didn't see, but I don't think they earned airtime. Like they didn't. I don't think it was anything other than they just played poorly. But a lot of LIV guys played great.
Yeah, DJ shot 8 over.
Yeah, exactly. Did he even make the cut?
Yeah, he made the cut. Yeah. He shot 8 over. Cam Smith shot 4 over. Another guy that people wonder why they weren't, you know, why they weren't showing more than him. So I mean, Harold Varner had the line of the day when he was coming off, and I read that, I screenshot it, and I didn't ever send that to you, but somebody said, you know, how do you think you guys did? And he said, I'm not real sure. I hadn't really looked at the leaderboard, and he looked up at the leaderboard and saw that Brooks was up there and Patrick Reed was up there, and he said, well, apparently we're doing pretty good, except for me, I suck.
That's a great line, but this is the line. I want to see if anybody caught this, because I laughed so hard when it was said by Jim Nance. And it was like, it was too perfect that he had to have written it down before and was like hoping he got a chance to say it. On 15, the first time that Brooks played it on Sunday, which was ending his third round, Brooks hooks it left, so he has to lay up, and he's behind the tree, so he doesn't even really have a great like line to lay it up. So he lays it up much further back, but it's right on the crosswalk. Okay. Did you hear what Jim Nantz said?
Mm-mm.
He said, and there's Brooke on the CW, the crosswalk.
Oh, wow.
Did you, nobody caught?
No, it got caught because I read about it on Twitter. I just never heard it. Somebody posted about it.
He said, there's Brooks on the CW. That's the crosswalk.
That's a beautiful line.
I laughed.
That's a beautiful line.
And you know how I am about Liv. You know, I'm going to take up for Liv, but I like good lines. And that was
good one-liners. That's a great one-liner. That's well done.
Surely they had to have that, like rehearsed. And I was waiting. I wanted to see the reaction because Trevor Immelman came up like directly after that. And I was thinking he was just going to bust out laughing, but he didn't. I don't think a lot of people caught it, but
Trevor doesn't know what the CW is. He's South African. They should have gone to somebody else.
But yeah, props, Jim. That was that was absolute perfection. Masterful troll there. So overall, again, I thought live coverage was the ones that played well got the coverage that they should have gotten. Other than that, Thursday sucked, and I think they probably caught a lot of heck for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that made up for it.
Brandel
still, like, Brandel could not get over Brandel could listen to multiple pros say that everybody does the whole tell the other guy what club he hit type thing. You know what I mean?
I love that you brought this up. We hadn't even talked about that. I got a take on this, by the way.
Well, so if you don't know what happened, I think it was maybe the first round.
Yeah, it was first round. He was playing with Gary Woodland.
Yeah, Gary Woodland. Brooks is on 15. He hits a 5-iron to the middle of the green on and two, and they catch the caddy saying five. They don't really know who he's saying it to, but it kind of looks like he's saying it to Gary Woodland's caddy. Gary Woodland hits next. Brooks actually holds up five. And there is a rule that says, like, giving advice to other people or whatever is a violation. It's a two-shot penalty, whatever. Brandel would not let that go. Like, he would not let that go. And, like, multiple people, Nota Begay said it. Who's the Irish guy that was on there all weekend? I can't think of his name, but he said it was not a big deal. There was multiple guys that said, we do this all the time. Like, and then later, like, if you listen to Brooks's post or round press conference, they were talking about a certain hole, and it was when Brooks had like a really good drive and flew the green there. What happened there? And he's like, well, I'm about a club longer with my irons than John. And I knew he hit a seven. So I was going to hit a, and it's like, wait a minute. How do we know? How do you know that? Like exact, because this is clearly something that always happens. Like, I'm sure there's probably some dudes that want to like hide the iron or like play tricks or whatever, but it doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal.
No, you and I do it. I mean, whenever we play, we do it all the time. What'd you hit? Because I know that you're a couple of clubs ahead of me. I'm like, what'd you swing there?
Yeah.
And so that was that. First and foremost, Randall let it go because, as Brooks said, Gary is about a half a club to a club longer than Brooks. And Gary was 15 yards in front of Brooks. So there's no chance Gary's hitting a friggin' five right there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Number two, a caddy chimed in. Now, they did not use this excuse, and they didn't say it. Although I think that Gary's caddy alluded to it. They have two spotters on 15 and a spotter on 16 that is for the television coverage. And both of them, Brooks' caddy mouthed five, and Brooks gave the five sign. And that's the thing, is they said that they were talking to one of those spotters that was that they got a spotter that's up there in the landing area in case they go for it. And they got another spotter that's down there in the layup area if they're eating sand or lob or whatever they're hitting. So that's
for TV purposes. So like for the TV. Commentator can say he's hitting a 5-iron in there. You know what I mean? Like that's how they know Dottie They're telling Dottie what club they're hitting. Like, they tell Dottie what club they're hitting. So,
and another thing, the angle they showed, neither Gary nor Gary's caddy were looking at him when they said it.
Well, I think they probably were talking amongst each other, because I think everybody does it. I don't think it's a deal. I don't think you really super get
the rule states you know you can't ask for advice. I don't think they were asking for advice. Gary didn't look across the way and go, "Hey man, what'd you hit there?
What should I hit here?" Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't ask that. That's the rule. The rule isn't that if I hit it and I hit it bad, I turn around and look at you and go, "Man, that was a terrible four iron." And then you're like, "Oh, we hit a four." Like,
Well, here's another thing. Here's another thing. And I thought Brandel did a terrible job explaining why this is a big deal. What if Gary takes that advice and it puts him right in the middle of the green, and that's something that he wouldn't have known. And then now they've got an unfair advantage moving forward, blah, 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 blah. Well, like, what if they're coming off the green and he says, "What'd you hit back there?" Yeah, I hit a five iron. And he notes that. And then if he's in the same spot the next round, is that an unfair advantage? Like, what are we talking about? Like, it's just
where does it stop? Because that's another thing. Is somebody brought up, one of the caddies that I follow on Twitter, he said, "So what if he told him five? Gary's a longer hitter than he is. So if Gary hits five right there, he probably parks it in the middle of that pond on 16.
On 16, like, yeah.
Yeah, like, I think that the only reason Brandel was harping about this is because Brooks is a lip guy.
And he could have won, and he thought he had a really good shot of winning.
Yes, and he thought he had a good shot of winning, so he wanted to have a two-stroke penalty.
Exactly, which makes you a huge bitch, by the way. Sorry, I just had to say that. if we want to win on technicalities and not just beating another guy, then you're a huge, you know what? You're a gaping one of those is what you are, Brandel. He blocked me on Twitter, by the way.
Did he really? He still hadn't blocked me.
So
you didn't even cuss at him. That's what gets me.
Yeah. Let me tell you something that looks so good it'll make you want to cuss. You're just like, man, these are amazing. No, Bad Birdie Golf, guys, you got to check them out. Yes. Use your coupon code DAD15 and save 15% off. I have like 7 or 8 polos now. And I'm going to –
Yes, you do.
2 hats. I mean, I'm in love with this stuff. The material is phenomenal. They're lightweight. They're loud. The great prints, great colors. But they don't feel like a cheap shirt. They feel like a very high quality, you name it brand. That's what they're going to feel just like, you won't be able to tell the difference. They're already inexpensive. They're way under $100, but when you take another 15% off, you just save that much more. They got pullovers as well. They got hats, tons of polos, shorts, pants. They got it all. Club head covers, putter head covers, driver head covers. Just cool logo too. And it's kind of fitting, because like the birdies we make are probably bad birdies. Like, this is just I don't know how many pretty birdies we make. It's normally
definitely unplanned.
Yeah, definitely unplanned. Exactly. So check them out, Bad Birdie Golf. If you want to stand out and feel good while you're playing, there you go, Bad Birdie. All right. Next topic. 3 LIV golfers in the top 5. Is that a big accomplishment? I know it's sort of moral victory-esque. Does that help push them forward, or does Brooks losing sort of overshadow that? So what's more impactful on LIV? The 3 golfers in the top 5, or Brooks sort of wilting and losing there at the end?
I'm going to go 3 in the top 5. And the reason being is because I just think that's impressive. I mean, I know it's a smaller field. We're not talking about the U.S. Open. We're not talking about the Open Championship. But, 3 in the top 5 is huge, considering, because I honestly think it could have been better. I know DJ didn't put his best foot forward this weekend. So, because I picked DJ to probably be one of those that finished in the top 10. I did not pick Phil Mickelson finished tied for second. I can tell you that right now. But 2 LIV guys tying for second, Mickelson and Koepka, and then Reed in there tying for fourth. I think that's big for their brand. I think that's big for them to, it's a reminder of those that haven't watched them this year is to maybe tune over. Yeah, they can still play. They can still go off their ball. And honestly, I mean, Kyle, I've been going back and forth with these people on Twitter today. I'm sick of the anti-lifts. Just be pro golf. I know we keep saying that, but it's just frustrating because you got to see the best guys in the world play today and play this weekend, not necessarily play today, but they got to play this weekend. And so this is just a gentle reminder that, you know, three out of the top five guys being live guys that, hey, these guys can play. Maybe I flip over and watch a little bit of them. I mean, I think that's more of a issue on Liv's part to get rid of that shotgun start crap that they do and possibly, you know, make it the everyday golf fan love it. And because I think they just got some changes they got to make on their broadcast. But I do think more than Brooks failing because he still finished second, I think it's more of a long – because, I mean, he lost to John Rahm, who's one of the hottest golfers on tour this year. So, I mean, at one point in time, Rahm had won – 5 out of his last 7 tournaments dating back to last year. That's, I don't think it was necessarily as much of a meltdown as much as it was, you know, Rahm just hung in there and stayed steady the entire time. And Brooks had a bad day and ended up faltering because at the end of the day, Phil had a good day.
Right.
And Reed had a good day.
In a vacuum, I agree with you. I agree with you in a vacuum. But perception wise, I think the Brooks thing hurts overshadows the three guys in the top five than just them being in the top five. I think from a perception standpoint, and this is kind of goes into the another topic that I want to talk about. 54 holes. They're not as sharp. They can't push forward and win a major even when they have the lead. They're not used to playing 72 holes, blah, 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 blah. This is an indictment on that. I think that from a perception standpoint, the way it went down will overshadow the fact that three guys on a tour beat the crap out of a ton of PGA Tour guys that are laughed at, that are mocked by golf media, that are mocked by old man, Puritan golf guy. I mean, you get what I'm saying? Like that they came in and they took care of business. And a lot of dudes played well. A lot of guys played well, not just those three. So Cam Smith played well. He couldn't quite get it going. The conditions were tough. But I just think the way that Brooks sort of, I'm just going to say wilted. I mean, the way he kind of lost it there, I think will overshadow how well those dudes played. Unfortunately.
See, I don't buy into the whole 54 hole thing because Phil Mickelson's 52 years old and he did just fine today. Fat Prick Reed is not in the best shape in the world and he did just fine today. So clearly, I mean, they weren't too tired. I don't know that, you know, if fatigue had anything to do with Brooks, I don't think it's because of 54 holes. I think it was because he played 10 holes this morning and then turned around and played 18 again this afternoon. So maybe 28 holes in one day had something to do with him instead.
You don't buy that the 54 holes, you're already paid up front, so the pressure is off. Like, do you grind? You may not grind as hard. You may be sort of relaxed. Like, you don't buy any of that, any of that narrative.
No, I think when they get in between the lines, I think that those guys are competitors. I think they like to compete. I think the money's a bonus, but no, I don't buy into that. I think those guys want to win no matter if they're – I don't care if they're rolling dice or they're, you know, at a blackjack table. I think they want to win regardless.
Sure. I just until one of them does it though,
I agree.
This is going to be a question. And I mean, it's gotta do something to your, at least maybe like your mental sharpness. You're not playing in the, you know, the Players, you're not playing in like the Arnold Palmer, and you're not playing in these big events all year with the, you know, the best players in the world trying to go out there and, you know, knock each other off. And it's sort of like a party. You're sort of a relaxed, you know, you know, atmosphere at LIV. I mean, it's not super uptight, and it's not, I don't feel like it's super, you know, out there grinding. I mean, surely it has to have some sort of effect, like maybe some sort of effect.
Oh, I think that, it has like, some sort of, yeah.
When you get in that moment, when you get in that moment, you know, you don't, the only way you can like, the only way you can be able to handle those type of moments is if you're in them a lot. Yeah. And like this LIV sort of completely removes that to where you only have four times a year, essentially, where you're mm-hmm. in that moment, in those type of moments. So I don't know. I feel like it's got to affect some aspect of it from maybe if it's just mentally, you know, being able to handle the pressure or being able to, you know, I don't even really know. Like just
you
being
said,
able
the best
to,
thing you, the best thing you said was them being able to remain sharp. Cause I think the one thing that I think we can all agree with LIV is these guys are very regimented. They're very OCD. You see their routines that they do whenever they go to the course, they hit the same damn clubs in a warm up. They have the same putting routine over and over. They have the same bunker routine when they're warming up. So the fact that they are doing that once every 4 weeks, or then they do it 2 weeks in a row, and then they take 4 weeks off, and then go 3 weeks in a row, and then they take a month and a half off. I think the sharpness, that's one of the first things you said. I think that's probably the key to it. I think that it's tough for them to maintain that concentration sharp. Because think about it, Kyle, if you and if we're playing on that tour and we had, I don't know, 5 weeks off, one of those weeks you're going to spend time with family. I mean, you may pick up a club, but you're probably not going to be grinding out there on the range and,
yeah,
you know, sitting on the putting green and treating it, because you know you got 4 other weeks to prepare before the next tournament. So you're going to take some time, let your body heal, that kind of stuff. And not that PGA Tour players don't do that, but PGA Tour players may take, what, 2 weeks off at max?
A lot of time.
I mean, during the season?
If that, you know.
And you know, that's just because they've been grinding for 5 weeks in a row, and then they may take two off, you know, leading into, say, a major or something like that. So I think the sharpness and consistency, if there's anything, if you're at the end of this season, if you're DJ and you're Brooks and those guys, you probably go to LIV and say, hey, we need to get something a little more regimented. Like, I understand that y'all don't want to compete against majors and you don't want to compete against the Arnold Palmer or the players, but this going 6 weeks between tournaments is not going to bode well for us if we want to play in majors.
Well, true, but I think they got to do some of that so they can go play in like on Asian tour events and get world ranking points.
Right.
So, right. I don't know. I wonder how mentally sharp you can be when you got to hit those pressure putts, because I just don't feel like you have that feel on the LIV tour right now.
I don't think Brooks putted well at all.
And I don't think that's what the LIV tour is like. I don't think that's the way it's built. I think it's supposed to be, you know, a more fun, lean on your, you know, the team aspect. Right. So I don't know, until somebody wins one, this is going to be the narrative. And the Brooks deal, this was the first time that someone's been really in contention. I mean, Brooks is the first LIV guy to actually have a lead in a major. So mm-hmm. It's going to be a talking point moving forward. So, and I think that's going to overshadow the fact that three dudes finish in the top five. So unfortunately, but That's just me. Last thing, talk about really quick, Tiger Woods withdraws. I did not know. I was very concerned for some videos that I saw. There was a video of right before they blew the whistle where he looked like his leg could break off, like the way he was scared to step because it hurt so bad. But then I come to find out that it's plantar fasciitis. In that same foot, which has nothing to do with his actual leg. It's more like a tendonitis, in his, you know, whatever the plantar is. I guess it's your foot.
Have you ever had it?
I've heard it's terrible.
Have you ever known a person that had it?
The only person. No, I've never known someone.
A buddy of mine
personally just had it.
That plays with us. He had it a couple of years ago, and he had it in the same foot as Tiger. He had it in the right foot. Let me tell you something. He said it hurt like really bad. Yeah. Like he didn't even have his leg crushed. So I couldn't imagine having it
on top of that.
In that same foot, on top of having a leg that's got pins and needles and rods and everything else in it. So,
yeah.
And this guy's like a tough guy. Like he's somebody that he doesn't really complain about, you know, injuries or, you know, a nagging back or something like that, or like his knee hurting if he turns a certain way. He literally was walking like Tiger was walking, and like towards the end of one of our rounds. And then he didn't play for another 3 weeks. Cause he was one of the guys that like played with us, like every Sunday afternoon he played with us, and he said it hurt. And even when he came back and started playing, he still limped around a little bit. And then that's playing 18 holes on a Sunday. That's not playing 18, 18, 18, and 18 in a row. So I couldn't imagine how hard it was for him to do. So those that are, you know, wonder, well, what is plantar fascia? And I think there's different degrees of it, but I'm telling you, the only person I've ever seen that had it real bad,
I wouldn't wish it on anybody. It's in the bottom of your foot. It's in the bottom of your foot. It's not in your leg.
It's in the bottom of your foot. And you actually, when you get it tested, it goes through the bottom and up through the heel. A lot of people think that they've torn their Achilles. That's how bad it is.
Yeah.
And then they get down there and they're like, nope, Achilles isn't torn. You got plantar fasciitis.
Yeah, exactly. I remember the first time I ever even heard of it, I was the Chicago, I think it was Joakim Noah was playing for the Bulls or something like that. And that was like one of the things they always talked about. Like they were trying to go on a playoff run, and they were really good at the time. And he was, you know, out with plantar fasciitis. I'm like, I've never even heard of this, you know? So
you can't jump, you can't cut, you can't move, you know, that's in his,
but that made me feel better. I said all that to say, it makes me feel better that that's not the reaction of his body to, you know, that is hook on that leg. Like that wasn't his leg. Here's another thing we're going to have to just get, you're going to have to understand that the limping, there may be some pain there, but the limping is due to the mechanism. Now the limping is permanent. Like for example, there's people that have scoliosis that have like they limp and they can't walk correctly. They're not necessarily in pain. That's just the way the mechanism of their body is. It makes them walk with a limp or walk with have issues that way. He's going to always limp like forever. That doesn't mean that he's in pain all the time. Now I'm sure it's uncomfortable, but I don't think that if you're in, I'm trying to sum this up in that I don't think that if you're in so much pain, if the pain causes you to limp, and it's like he's doing, he's not going to play. Like you can't play, you can't walk and play. That is just the mechanism that's in his leg right now, the rebuilt leg. I don't know if it's a little bit shorter. I don't know if it doesn't flex all the way like when he's walking, like because of it's been rebuilt. It's going to make him limp. Like it's just going to make him limp. And if he was in pain, if the pain caused the limp, there's no way he could play because he limps every step. So that would mean that he's having to walk 72 holes whenever he plays, and not counting all the practice rounds and pro-ams and things like that. Like there's just no way you could do that with a pain that causes you to limp. So that I feel better about the chances that he could still continue to play for a little bit, because it was considered plantar fasciitis and not like a strain or something to do with the actual leg. Did that make any sense?
At the end of the day, he's been doing this for over a year. This may be just his natural walk. That may be the only way he knows how to walk now. I mean, this may be a habit forming. Yeah. And that's why it does. And can you imagine if you had that rebuilt leg? Can you imagine any, like if a mosquito bit you on your leg and you felt pain, you'd be like, oh crap, what now? Like you'd constantly be wondering what, what's going on with that leg?
And he was walking gingerly. He was probably walking gingerly because of how wet it was. Like, what if I slip? But like he got 1 foot in the bunker and 1 foot out on 18. And I thought he was going to break his, everybody's like, oh my God, this is where it happens. And he kept going. Like he kept going. Yeah. Like I wouldn't think you could even do that if you're, you know, in that much pain that you limp every step. But regardless, I'm optimistic because of it being plantar fasciitis and not just his leg was hurting, because if that's the real diagnosis,
he's very private. That may be something just thrown out there to make us quit asking questions. I don't know.
The way that he was walking, and it seemed like it hurt for his foot. Like it was like he had a, like, I don't know, like he was stepping on something hot. You know what I mean? Like he was really worried of putting pressure on his foot. I do believe that it's something to do with some type of plantar fasciitis or tendonitis in his foot. It did not, I don't know. It just didn't seem like a leg thing to me. I could be totally wrong. He may never play again, but I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic based off.
No, of, I agree with you. I completely
based off
agree
of that.
You.
So, anyways, y'all have a great week. We'll talk again soon. There's some stuff, some stories that came out of the Masters that we want to talk about that weren't necessarily golf related, and just see what we think, what y'all think about it, what we think about it, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. So, happy Monday after the Masters. Hope y'all enjoyed it. Hope you had a great Easter. Hope you just had a great weekend in general. And let's have a great week. So, episode 279 of the Dad Bod Golf Pod. We're always,
always stoked.
You've been listening to the Dad Bod Golf Pod. Always stroking.